Well, Commodore is bringing us back. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game, as we always do at this time on Wednesdays. We say hello to John McClain. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. John, what's up? How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Merry Christmas to you and your listeners.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you as well. We'll see who what NFL teams get some good gifts, but I want to start with that Titans and Jags punishment that everybody got last week. 10-6, the final. The Titans unable to score a touchdown and had the ball in the red zone on two different occasions. I feel like we spent the last few weeks talking about Will Levis and, you know, his progression. He didn't have his best game. Maybe it's not all on him, but what's kind of your view of what you saw last Sunday?
Well, I saw the Jaguars the week before, and then I saw the Titans before that. And it is amazing to me that the Titans could come in here and beat up the Texans the way they did, scoring on the first three possessions, including two touchdowns, and then stink it up so bad offensively against the Jaguars, who are terrible. And what a wasted 100-yard performance by Tony Pollard. I guess the best thing you could say is Levis was only sacked twice and didn't have an interception. But, man, oh, man, it just, you know, the defense has got to be frustrated because the defense has way outplayed the offense. And I can't imagine that Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan are going to not pursue another quarterback next offseason. And the reason is, you know, Callahan was not there for the drafting of Levis. You don't know if that was driven by Carthon, if it was driven by Vrabel to take him in the second round. But when you look around the league and all the quarterbacks taken the last 2 years, including Bryce Young, who showed remarkable improvement lately in some close games that the Panthers haven't been able to win, but there's nobody that wouldn't say his career is on an upward trajectory where it's like Levis is a roller coaster that spends too much time on the downswing. So the guy who's in the best position after this season should be Sam Darnold, coming off his 5-touchdown performance Sunday. There's no way, well, I can say that Minnesota could sign him to a long-term contract for $40 or $50 million a year, and then they would have to trade J.J. McCarthy at some point to a team that had him rated as a first-round pick, and it would be very strange if they let Darnold go, if they keep this up and went to the unproven, untried McCarthy with the possibility of taking a huge step back. Don't know what their plans are for Daniel Jones next year, if he's just a one-year, one-half-year stopgap backup, or they want to try to sign him to play behind McCarthy. But they got a tough decision coming in Minnesota. And maybe Sam Darnold doesn't want to stay there. He wants to go somewhere else. Now, they could franchise him, which would cost a lot of money. But I'm guessing he's going to be on the market. And you're talking about timing. His timing would be incredible because there's a shortage of quarterback prospects coming out. Sure, Sanders is going to be the top one. I'm guessing that Cam Ward will be number two. But as I pointed out on a talk show yesterday, 2 years ago at this time, nobody was talking about Anthony Richardson. You guys would have known about him because he was in the SEC. I'd never heard of him. Because at this time of 2 years ago, I don't know if they played in the bowl game, but he had, 12 starts at this point, or 11. And it wasn't until the combine, when he showed his size, speed, and arm, that all of a sudden everybody fell in love with him. So that doesn't mean somebody is not going to look great in shorts and T-shirts and have teams fall in love with him. And maybe whatever will be Brian Callahan and the Titans. But I think you can't run the risk of another roller coaster season like this with Levis, because if you tell Amy Adams Strunk we're going to ride with Will again, Will better be the quarterback you thought he'd be when he was drafted high in the second round. Or you're gone.
Yeah, exactly. On Sam Darnold, though, do you – and I mean, you just mentioned it, that there's a – you know, there's not going to be a lot of quarterbacks available in this draft, you know, from a free agent standpoint. There's not going to be a lot available unless there's some surprise out there. Do you think that the league will then recognize, you know, those teams like the Titans that could be desperate for a quarterback and go, well, we're going to have to overpay him. That's just what we're going to have to do. Or do you think that maybe his market won't be as big as we might think it is because they look at him and go, hey, he's been good with Minnesota, but was that just a flash in the pan?
Well, he's got a great receiver, the best in the NFL, in Justin Jefferson. He does not have a great running game. And no. Their running game is not very good at all. And he's got – Kevin O'Connell has emerged as a terrific coach. The guy who's calling the – Kevin O'Connell calls the plays. His offensive coordinator, who works with him the closest, is Wes Phillips, the grandson of Bum Phillips and the son of Wade Phillips, who everybody thinks will be a third-generation head coach at some point in the next couple of years. But I think because of the shortage and the desperation – my God, you'd love to be Sam Darnold's agent. But if you put him in a system that is not a system conducive to him, you might run the risk of him taking a step back. I believe the Vikings are his fourth team. I remember seeing him against the Texans as a rookie in the rain, and Deshaun Watson played really well. Darnold played well. Watson and the Texans won, but afterward, the New York media was going on and on about the Jets finally found their quarterback. This kid is outstanding, going to be outstanding. And then it didn't work out. And usually it's because when a talented quarterback who's rated highly by everybody doesn't work out, it's usually because of the organization. And in a case, if a quarterback does work out, like Bo Nix, where most scouts, if you go back and read all the scouting reports on Bo Nix, very few thought he was a first-round pick. Most thought he should go in the second round. So his success is a byproduct of going to the right coach and the right organization. So those poor old, I'm going to say poor old quarterbacks because they make so much money, but everybody wants to blame them when most of the time they should blame the team. So I'm thinking Sam Darnold's going to cash in big time because all they're going to need is one team out there to pay him $50 million a year.
That's a good point, John. John McClain's on with the Chase and Big Joe show. John, you know Bud Adams probably better than anybody else that covered that team forever. I got a hypothetical for you. Would Bud Adams had traded A.J. Brown in that moment, had your GM come to you and said, hey, this guy wants this much money, what are we going to do? What would Bud
That's
Adams have done?
Great question.
Well, Bud would have left it up to his general manager and his head coach. Bud didn't tell him what to do. Bud signed off on things. But Bud wouldn't have said, okay, I think you need to trade A.J. Brown. Or if they said, we want to trade A.J. Brown, he would have stayed out of it. And if Floyd Reese and Jeff Fisher were the general manager and a coach and they'd wanted to keep Brown, they would have kept Brown. And if Floyd, who had final say on personnel decisions, Jeff had final say on game day decisions, wanted to trade him, he would have been traded. Bud would have said, okay. But I can't imagine that regime would have traded A.J. Brown for any reason.
Well, yeah, the money-wise, because A.J. wanted more money at the time than any other receiver in the league. Would that have swayed Bud at all, or he would have still given the decision back to his people then in charge of getting the football done?
The only time Bud made a decision on a player that I can remember was Vince Young. And the only reason Bud wanted Vince so bad is because he knew everybody in Houston wanted the Texans to draft Vince. And he knew how popular he was. And, of course, he won a national championship. So he told them, you draft him or I'll get somebody who will. And he said, and I called him up and did a story with him where he said, VY is my guy. So I knew no matter how much they wanted Matt Leinart or Jay Cutler, Vince Young was going to Nashville. And that was the only time I can remember. It had nothing to do with football.
Well, John McClain is our guy, and we will continue our conversation with John coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chasing Big Joe on this Wednesday, continuing our conversation with John McClain. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work.
All right, John, I have to ask you about Bill Belichick, if the rumors are true that he's going to be the next head coach at North Carolina. And the simple question is, why?
I'll still be shocked if he goes to North Carolina. The Athletic reported yesterday they've made him an offer. A guy from England reported he accepted the deal, and he was waiting for them to accept his acceptance, which made no sense. If you accept somebody's offer, you're accepting it. So I'm sure they've made him an offer. I watched Tom Brady, Julian Edelman, and Rob Gronkowski on the Fox pregame show kind of laugh about it and make fun of it and said they do not see him coaching in college. And I know a lot of people, I've seen stories about it, saying college is now is free agency like the NFL. No, it's not. College, you can be free agent every year. Players go in and say, pay me or I'm out of here. I looked at the portal yesterday to see what positions I know Baylor needs and who's out there so far. And you pay them or they're gone. It's amazing to me how many quarterbacks from good teams are leaving because they can get more money. So Belichick, he can talk to his good friend Nick Saban. Why did Saban leave Alabama? Because he got tired of players wanting to know how much they're going to get paid and having to deal with the portal. So I'm sure he would not give it a strong recommendation. But on the other hand, guys, remember last year, the only team to talk to him was Atlanta. And he met with Arthur Blank twice, the only prospect to meet with him twice. Raheem Morris didn't. But then there was a pushback within the organization. I'm guessing Rich McKay, the president, and Fontenot, the GM, didn't want Belichick in there telling them what to do. So I think he wants to break Don Shula's record. If he does go to North Carolina, good luck for him. It certainly created a lot of interest in North Carolina, the ACC, and college football. And the way college football is going, they're going to change the format of the playoff next year. I just read there's a good chance it could happen because of the ridiculousness of the seeding process and the way it's doing with automatic qualifiers and everything, plus SEC, of course, all the Alabama fans whining about the injustice of it all. They're going to change it. And what would Belichick get in there? Also, wasn't North Carolina one of the teams trying to leave the ACC? So unless his agent has called every team that may have a opening and they've all told him they're not interested, I don't see it. I may be wrong, but I don't see it.
I am with you 100%. I still think in the back of my mind he takes that Raiders job. With he knows Brady, he knows Mark Davis well. And I think, and they're terrible, and that's a situation where that gives a lot of positive PR to that franchise. To me, I think that's where he ends up, but I'm usually wrong anyway.
Can you imagine Brady coming out to practice as an owner and screaming and chewing him out, saying, Belichick, I could get a coach down the street in Las Vegas High School to come out here and do a better job than you, which is what he used to always yell at Brady in practice. Because Brady knew, and everybody knew, if Belichick chewed Brady out publicly all the time in front of all the players, it would make them play harder. If he treats Brady like that, my God, how's he going to treat me like it? And in that Netflix charity thing he did, several of them did imitations of him screaming at Brady about that kid down the street at that high school who could come there and do what he does. It would be a great show. And I tell you this about Mark Davis. He's got Brady in the organization. They need a quarterback. He needs to make sure Brady's going to, and this is certainly a conflict of interest, considering he's in the media, that make sure that Brady has watched tape, even if he can't go scout these prospects, and gives him his recommendation and plays a role in it, just like Brady played a role in that kid from Ann Arbor that committed, the quarterback Underwood, to LSU. Then he went back to Michigan.
Right.
And Brady was in contact with him a lot, recruiting for his alma mater. So Mark Davis should make the best use of Brady, including should he keep Antonio Pierce?
That's an interesting question for sure. The Bengals coming to town this week to take on the Titans. John, I watched them on Monday Night Football where they ended up squeaking by and beating the Dallas Cowboys. Do you think that's a team built enough? I mean, playoffs are a question. They're probably out of reach at this point. But do you think with Joe Burrow, are they good enough to maybe make a run here at the end to at least keep it interesting?
Yeah, I don't think so. They've waited too long. They were fortunate to beat the Cowboys. My goodness. Lou Anarumo, their defensive coordinator, didn't get stupid overnight.
Yeah.
They just let too many players get away because of money. You know, the Brown family is notoriously cheap. Now, when you're paying Joe Burrow what he's making, $50 million a year, you're not cheap. But there's a lot of players they've let go. They soured on Joe Mixon for whatever reason. The Texans got him for a seventh-round pick, and he's had seven 100-yard games. He's one of the best backs in the league. Now they can't run the ball. And I'll bet you that he was in there in the last year of his contract. They didn't want to pay him after that. And then the Texans gave him a new 3-year deal. So I think I would blame it on management. You can't keep working miracles. Burrow is maybe – he's having a season like Deshaun Watson in 2020. He was great. He led the league in yardage, average per attempt. He was second to Rodgers in ratings, counting rushing. He was 38 touchdowns, didn't throw many interceptions. That's the reason Cleveland thought he could duplicate that in Cleveland, and then they made that terrible trade and gave him the terrible contract. But in Burrow's credit, he has been outstanding, and he's blessed with a great receiver, too, counting T. Higgins. But I'll guarantee you, you know, I don't know what the over-under is going to be in rushing yards, but I'm taking the Titans because they're going to shut down that run. And they're going to get after Burrow, but Burrow's probably the best quarterback they're going to play, so they're going to have to score. And right now, as you guys know, if you can't score on Jacksonville, their defense is not as – Cincinnati's is not good, but Jacksonville's worse. And if you can't score a touchdown against Jacksonville, how in the world are you going to do it against the Bengals?
Hey, man, John, you spend a lot of time around guys who played a long time in NFL and then their 70s and their 80s. Have you seen this Mark Gastineau-Brett Favre encounter?
Oh, yeah, I saw it. And 30 for 30's got it. They're milking it on ESPN and online and everything. I've seen it. Gastineau went up to him at a card show and ripped him up because he let – it makes Gastineau sound terrible. Gastineau's wife went over and apologized because he's bitter because he thinks that Favre took a dive. So – Strahan could get the record, Gastineau's record. Gastineau should just be glad that sacks didn't become an official statistic in 1982, or he wouldn't have owned that record. Deacon Jones would have. But I think it's very catty, and of course ESPN's going to milk it for everything they can.
Well, you know, it comes out, oh, he's got CTE. Watch out, watch out. I don't subscribe to that. I just see a guy who thinks he lost out on a lot of money because he's no longer the sack leader. Whatever it is, though, it's sad.
Sad. I don't think it's sad, Joe. I think it's pathetic that it's like he would care enough about something like that. And T.J. Watt has since tied it. Is he going to chew him out when he sees him? And as far as CTE, you cannot tell if somebody has CTE until they die and their brain is diagnosed. So it looks to me like Gastineau still just got a huge ego. Or ESPN, they talked to him about doing this thing on the New York Sack Exchange. Who gives a damn about the New York Sack Exchange?
Right.
I mean, why are they unveiling something about the Jets? Nobody cares about Jets. Jets fans don't care about the Jets except who they're going to hire today as coach and general manager, and will Rodgers be back? They'd be better doing a 30 for 30 on a disaster for this season. If it wasn't New York, we wouldn't be having to hear about the New York Sack Exchange. So I'm guessing that's like wrestling.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. And the reason I ask is you spend a lot of time around these retired guys who played 10, 12 years, been out of the league for 25, 30 years. They don't act like that, at least the ones I've been around.
Well, they're not – ESPN's not doing a 30 for 30 on them. I was at a lunch last Friday with Mean Joe Green, Kenny Houston, both first ballot Hall of Famers, Dan Pastrini, Oilers quarterback. We were at a barbecue place, and they were telling stories. And all of them are approaching 80, and they all still got their faculties, and they're funny, and they tell great stories, but none of them, like, go off their rocker. Now, if ESPN said, hey, we're going to pay you this much, and we need something, and maybe they didn't, and inspire him to do that, but obviously they need a push, and that's giving it to them. And I can't think of anything more boring than watching something on the New York Stock Exchange, which was fun at the time.
Right.
I would rather see a 30 for 30 on Fireman Ed, the Jets fan.
I think you're right. I would agree with that, Chase. Give us Fireman Ed over the hill, Mark Gastineau.
John, appreciate it as always. We'll talk next week.
Guys, my pleasure. Thank you very much. Merry Christmas and happy holidays.
Absolutely. John McClain joining us here on the program as he does every week. Joe, have I got a story for you?
Uh-oh.
Because I think that I have now seen enough proof to make me think that this world has truly gone soft. I will explain.
Oh,
we will do that next. Right. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.